Wayfair's big sale is returning. Get ready for Way Day. For 4 days only, score up to 80% off all things home with free shipping on everything. From October 26th through 29th, score Wayfair's best deals, like up to 80% off area rugs, up to 60% off mattresses, up to 60% off bedroom furniture, and more exclusive doorbuster deals. So mark your calendar and shop Way Day starting October 26th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School. Sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up, we're back. Hour two, Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School, the New School Way, 1040 Oak Street, 11th and O, if you want to be just plain and efficient. But we are brought to you by the Mercado, Certified Piedmontese, Special Ingredients and Butcher Shop, 84th and Havelock, 30th in Yankee Hill, 85th and Audermatt slash Old Cheney, 168th and Maple up there in the O. Waiting for my man Brad. So before we dive into some other stuff,
Brad came through.
What'd he say? He said, Brad's two reasons is not big enough on the D-line and lack of good linebackers to run the 4-3.
No, to run the 3-3-5. He wants the 4-3 because of the lack of size.
Right.
Yeah, and
lack of good linebackers.
Yeah.
You know, I've said this. You know, they run, you know, there's not a big difference in 3-3-5, 4-3. Except if you bring in essentially normal 4-3 defense linemen. That's essentially two defensive tackles and two, you know, really handing their defensive ends. Mm-hmm. You know, Nebraska, you know, has two defensive tackles, one defensive end, and one hybrid. The jack position.
Right.
It's really all the same. Because you could have...
You're just standing in the jack.
You could have... Just, you know, McCullough, you know, being the defensive end that doesn't go to the tight end side, and he could stand up or be a hand in the dirt. He's still the same player or in the same size. And so linebacker play, I think, you know, especially off of last week, I think they played a lot better. I think the 3-3-5 probably suits these guys a little bit better than the 4-3 because in the 4-3, you got to have a really thumper in the middle. You got to throw, you got to be real. You got, I mean, that's where Ray Lewis played, Dick Butkus, and all those guys. 3-3-5, I think they can move around, give them a little bit more flexibility and play their athletic ability. So, but then I will say this in the end, Brad, is that they run 4-man fronts, they run 3-man fronts, they ran 5-man fronts. So it really doesn't matter. Now, I understand Brad's point because it's easier probably to recruit to the 4-3 because you can. You know, get two defense tackles, do two defensive ends, and kind of figure it out from there. 3-3-5 is a little bit different because of that jack position where you got to have somebody that can put their hand in the dirt, play off of 2 feet, play with a split stance. It's essentially like you're rushing the passer and affect the run or pass at point of attack at a high percentage.
What's funny to me, Jay, is that we continue to get these questions. It would be one thing if they had just popped up and we were answering the 3-3-5 versus 4-3 thing for the first time now that Nebraska has shown some struggles against the run. But even when Nebraska was top 20 and even top 15 in the country in total defense, you were still getting the same question,
which is
how I know that people just hate three odd numbers.
You know, I think, you know, struggling against the run has nothing to do with the front. Sure, if you have, you know, smaller players, and sure, there is a little bit of that. Okay, you'd like to have Ty Nash in there, and you're comparing in his revisionist history, and you maybe didn't appreciate that when you had it, right?
You can tell me that Nebraska needed to go recruit the next Ty Robinson and Nash Hutmaker and have them ready to take over, and I'd believe that.
And it took some while for them to get to where they were last year.
Well, it's fifth and sixth year guy.
The the time that's hurting the things that hurt Nebraska in the run game had nothing to do with the front or the size of the players. It had to do with just execution. Tackle better, get off blocks, align better, communicate better. Didn't have anything to do with it.
Right. I mean, every defense has an answer for a gap.
It wasn't like they just lined up and just blew you out the way. Like the Dallas Cowboys when they had Emmitt Smith in that offensive line where they were just obliterating people. Or when Michigan came in here a few years ago where you had some really good defensive calls and good players, but they were just that much better. You called the right defense for the right play, and they just beat you. Mm-hmm. That one is more self-inflicted wounds. And so I do understand Brad's point. He says that also we don't have any more JoJo Domans. But Brad, JoJo Doman was probably a 3-3-5 guy. He was not a take-on guy. He was not a thumper. So
he'd been a tweener.
Yeah, but that's where he would have been better at the 3-3-5.
Mm-hmm. Where does Gifford fit in that?
Right where he's at.
Where Doman was. Kind of that role.
Or kind of like where Singleton's playing. Singleton's playing at a really high level, I think. Playing kind of that inverted safety linebacker type of deal. I like it.
So you're saying move him down to linebacker, Brad? I'm joking. Move Deshaun Singleton to linebacker.
Only on nickel.
Yeah.
He could be the Will linebacker in nickel. But, you know, I think they did, you know, they just need to, you know, play better. They played decent last week, played good last week or whatever you want to call it. And so they got to do the same against Maryland. To do that, you don't have to worry about what front they're in because they play so many things and they do so many different, give the offenses so many different looks. They play 3-4-5 man fronts all the time, or mm-hmm. two man fronts and two outside. They do a multitude of things, and that's what you're able to get when you have a coach that comes from the NFL like Coach Butler.
Brad chimes in again. Nebraska needs a Carlos Polk type guy
in a 4-3. Yes,
because they're not running a 4-3.
Right,
that's what they're recruiting to.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah, Polk Daddy was good. He's a great linebacker.
Now, you also don't want Nebraska to miss on the next Carlos Polk because they're so married to the 3-3-5.
Yeah, and I don't think when they recruit, they just kind of say, hey, look, this is what we do. We've done this. We've done that. And majority of really good players aren't looking to play in the same system, or it doesn't have to be a guarantee that they play in the same system, in this case, a 4-3 front or 3-3-5 or a three-man front as they did in high school.
Right.
Because the majority of the time when you get here, you're going to be playing another position.
Because if you got blocked in high school, that's a problem.
Yeah, but then at this, you know, when you get here, you got to learn a whole new system. You could run a 4-3 in high school, a 4-3 at NC State, and come here in a 4-3 at Nebraska, and it's totally different. Mm-hmm. So you just got to just dive into it and become a better player. That's the hard thing. And so, you know, Brad says the linebackers don't have enough speed to do a 3-4. I would probably push back against that. I think Shavers and Javen Wright and definitely Dawson Merritt, they're run and hit guys.
They can move side to side.
They can run. They can run and hit. Mm-hmm. So
would Watson Trent maybe fit more of that traditional 4-3 middle, even though he's a little small?
Yeah, a little bit. You're like running a hit. He just needs to learn how to play in the Big Ten. It's mm-hmm. going to be something that where, you know, a couple games he gets it going. I just think with these guys, whether they look fast or not, I think they just need to, you know, work on the little things that lead to big things.
Well, and you've said this many times on Old School, it doesn't matter how fast they look. What's the best way for them to get fast is to do those little things, right? To help them play fast.
Yeah.
And then helping them play fast as well is the film study, right? Knowing that they're in charge of the communication, that it's not enough for them just to know their job and not just enough to know what everyone else needs to be told to do, but to understand the why behind it.
Yeah.
And then start to play with anticipation. Some of that will come, you know, especially for Shavers and Merritt as they get older, right? I mean, Javen Wright played an anticipatory game against Michigan State, especially in that first half. I mean, he was all over the place. That some of it comes with experience, absolutely. But if you're going to be those two key linebackers there in the 3-3-5, I mean, yeah, do the little things right. Make sure you know the why behind the defense, not just the what. And then no matter how fast or slow you are, you can play fast and be in the right spot at the right time, which is ultimately the most important point.
Yeah, I mean, they all had, good games last game, and learning how to play effectively in whatever scheme you're at is a lost art, and you got to put a lot of effort in it. And so, like Brad said, who's going to cover the tight end? Javon would probably cover a tight end. He's long, he's fast enough. He kind of creates some awkwardness if you're trying to get a pass, in around him. I mean, heck, last time I think they played Maryland, he had a one-handed catch on the sidelines.
Yeah.
So that's your answer. I think all of them just need to get a little bit better fundamentally, and that's what they can control. And then after that, the athletic ability to take care of itself. So they're more than capable, and they just got to be willing to do a little bit more. So unknown texter says, he had a question here. What did he say? What other schools would our linebacker start at? They are average at best. He says suspect at best.
At best. It's one thing to say
they
suspect.
They would start at UCLA, for sure. They would start at Purdue, for sure. They'd probably start at Northwestern, Wisconsin, for sure. That's four.
One of them at Michigan State. They got one stud, but.
Yeah, one of them at Michigan State. I'm just trying to think of all the teams. Probably at Rutgers, or at least one of them at Rutgers. Penn State, probably not. Michigan, probably not. Minnesota, a toss-up. Probably say at least one, Javon or Shavers.
Wisconsin, same boat.
Wisconsin, at least one.
Illinois, no. Indiana, no.
Yeah.
But again, I think that's 10. Yeah, I mean, you're about half the league. Yeah, it's at least nine, right?
9, 10. So,
well, that's kind of the point too, is that the talent level that you judge Nebraska to have is pretty much right where Nebraska's finished in the conference over the last few years, right? I mean, in the long run, your talent takes you to the level that your talent takes you to.
Yeah,
which sounds so reductive, simple, and basic, but Nebraska is a 4-1 team that's playing like a 4-1 team. Maybe you say they're a 4-1 team playing like a 3-2 team, but they were more talented. They beat Michigan State. They found a way, whatever you want to say. But in the long run, whatever your true talent level is, 99% of the time, it comes to the surface. There are those teams that way underperform due to culture, due to coaching, due to outside circumstances. There's those teams that way overperform because something just clicks. So they get all the bounces that one year. But way more often than not, you figure out who what your true talent level is when you look at your record.
Yeah.
And now you can have players that, if they go to another school, another situation, just because they were 6-6 players for 3 years doesn't mean they're not capable of being an 8-4 player. Again, that's why you have to take the whole picture. Is that, Nebraska has guys that could start at a bunch of schools across the league, but Nebraska doesn't have a bunch of guys that could start at any school in the league.
Yeah. And that's the big difference. And that's what I think Brad and Unmasked Texter is talking about, trying to, evaluate the roster. I think the roster is still in motion right now. So you won't know how really good the linebackers are until the end of the season. Like Unmasked Texter says, I completely disagree. If any of those coaches watch film and our linebackers are hitting the wrong gap and constantly being in the wrong spot. No. Gorilla Bear says Javon Wright would start at a lot of places. John and Corlin, I mean, we just named, 8 or 9 that he'd have potential to start. Defense alignment, personnel size, make plays and tackle, solid technique and in position, rest take care of itself. I mean, that's the truth. When you look at any player on the roster, you got to go out there and you have something to prove on our team. That's where you have some guys that are overzealous, maybe trying too hard, or they need to try a little bit more. And so it's a very unique process when you're in this kind of gray area with a football team that's trying to make a huge step in getting in back to relevancy. So
Michigan running back ran 75 yards thanks to 33 being in the wrong hole. Everyone messed up on that play. Right. I mean, even if someone did their job right, it looks like
he was in the game. Then.
And again, you can pick any one play and say he did this wrong. He did that wrong. He did this wrong. He did that wrong. Of course, those things are magnified in a one possession game. But you said it immediately after the game. Was Nebraska-Michigan really a one possession game?
Yeah.
you know, yeah, at the end of the day, it was, because you can't just cherry pick, you know, what possessions you count and which ones you don't. But I agree with you. It didn't really feel like a one possession
didn't
game.
Feel like it, but it was, and it would have been a great, ugly victory.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'd say a choppy victory, mm-hmm. you know, or ugly, whatever you want to call it.
I'd say choppy because, yeah, choppy, I mean,
it was so, it really, so it was a choppy loss. But, you know, you're 2 weeks, you know, there's, you're 2 weeks away or gone past that. Like, you did the, you handle your business during the bye week, you handle your business, you know, obviously Michigan State and Michigan State week. You should be looking at Maryland like, all right, I'm gonna double down linebacker run what we did last week.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna show you this is the way it's gonna be from here on out.
Mm-hmm.
Then you do that, the rest is history. So I think it's, again, a tremendous opportunity. Whether you run a 4-3, 3-4, you know, it was, it, I will say from my experience, it was a little bit of an adjustment when I went from a 4-3 to 3-4. But then once I got it, I was like, you know what, I kind of liked it a little bit better. But again, we ran nickel. That's four man front. So I'm right back to 3 or 4-3.
4-3.
Mm-hmm. In nickel and dime, we ran three man fronts. I'm right back to 3-4. Right. So you can't get so married into the defensive front. Sure, it could maybe provide some bigger bodies. That goes without standing. Three defensive linemen versus four.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. But you got to have guys that are able to play multiple fronts multiple times of the game with multiple people. And work in unison. That's where you stop a running back from getting 75 yards untouched to the crib. That's where you stop another running back 58 yards untouched to the crib, X, Y, and Z. Team game. Sometimes within those teams, you have some really special players. I was fortunate enough to play with some guys on defense that were special. But I will tell you this, every single one of them, from Grant Wisdom, Jason Peter, Tomich, Christian Peter, Dr. Death Phil Ellis, Tony Veland, Mike Minner, all these guys, they were all great players. Ralph Brown, Mike Brown, Tyrone was there. All great players. But the one thing they all had in common, they were great players inside the system and knew when to take chances and when not to. And they made huge plays because of it. Because they did some of the smallest things and made it look phenomenal. That's what they need to do.
Well, the full opportunity is there in front of Nebraska to do that. Like you said, I mean, so much of what's ailing Nebraska is
just taking advantage of it.
Yeah, taking advantage of the opportunities, yeah. Is of, you know, making the most of whatever time it is that they're spending in practice or on film. Because, yeah. Yes, Nebraska does have some athletic limitations across the roster, right? I mean, let's just stick with the running backs. Shavers, not the biggest guy. He's made up for it plenty of times, though, with his speed and with his mindset. You look at Marquise Watson-Trent. Found a way to be productive at the Division One level, despite not having the height that you would want in what you would call the underwear Olympics. Like, right, Javon Wright.
Yeah.
Think about him, the perseverance that he's shown. Now you could argue his physical, you know, maybe detraction is the injury history that he has. Dawson Merritt's biggest issue right now seems to be that he's a freshman, but they trusted him a lot. They put him in like the second play of the game last week with one of those packages. So they like him. They trust him. So, yeah, Nebraska does have to get better. Every single one of those guys, whether they're the true freshman in Dawson Merritt or the seventh-year guy in Javon Wright, can still get better and still have things to work on. But there are things they do well as well, and you can go up and down every position group on the roster. You can go player by player on the roster, and you can say that, yeah, I mean, sometimes it's the fact that they're outgunned athletically. Sometimes it's the fact that they just weren't focused on their assignment and let it slip a little bit and come back to bite them. It's everything all at once. You can't just say, oh, Nebraska's not good enough. Oh, Nebraska's too slow. Yeah. Oh, Nebraska's front is wrong. Sometimes it's right. Sometimes it's wrong. Sometimes they make the play. Sometimes they don't.
That's like the easy answer. You know, give up five sacks. Oh, it's the offensive line. It's everybody. Sure. There's going to be times. I mean, if Nebraska rolls out there man-to-man defense against Jeremiah Smith, it's just different. It's that apples and orange. Jeremiah Smith is just that much better. Sure. That's a known, but I think really where you have to make like some hay is that you got to really identify talent, develop talent, and find different mindsets that work extremely well together in this day and age of college football. So when you're in the portal or high school kids, it's as much as evaluating their mindset as their athletic ability and throw them all in there and then let them, you know, make it work. There's not a coach, as I'm looking at the top 25, right? as I'm looking at the top 25, I don't see a coach that's going to bed at night. Whether it's Ryan Day, Lanning, Mario Cristobal, my man Lane, all these guys are not going to bed and be like, you know what? I got everything I need on the roster, and we're significantly better than everybody else the rest of the way, no matter who it is. Or I got everything solved on my team. No, you don't.
No.
Lane has been lucky enough to win with a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Like the Hurricanes, they've won enough and been able to lean on their physicality. But can you do that all year? But more importantly, can you find a way to be more multiple and explosive in the pass game? Ohio State, he probably would like to have Will Howard back one more year. You don't. You got a freshman.
And that's not even a knock on Saiyan, who's playing pretty well.
Good. He's pretty playing well. Good. But but in order for him to go home, walk into his crib, sit back on a Friday, open up a brewski, and not
Know if he's old enough, but...
No, I'm talking about Ryan Day.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Open up a brewski or pop a brewski or whatever. You would think he would probably like a veteran quarterback. Plus, he would rather have Trayvon Henderson back.
Right.
So not
or Quinshon Judkins.
Right. So not every roster doesn't have questions. So, and that brings me. It brings me. Kevin Meyer, Meyer Corcombottle, 13th and South. You got to get over there. They still have their fall sale going on. He's out of town, but he wanted me to mention it. When we come back, we'll dive into some of those details. But then also, Austin, I want to ask you what your biggest takeaway was from Chicago.
Ooh.
Besides Nick eating everything in sight. And after you answer that question, you get to rate Nick as a travel partner.
Ooh, okay.
1 to 7. 1 being horrible, 7 being the greatest. Jay Foreman, my man Austin Orman, we'll be right back.
Watch Old School live on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up, second segment? Jay Foreman, Austin Orman. Old School, the new school way. Nice day outside.
Incredible.
Yeah. Temperatures are temperaturing, even though Nebraska might be in the storm.
It's grilling weather.
It's always. Definitely going on to Mercado. It's going to be a great weekend.
Any good tailgates at Seacrest when you drive in?
Hey, them parents get it cracking. I don't know where they at. They come in that game lit. I don't know where they tailgate. I don't know if they tailgate in their car or kind of get cars around. And I don't know if there's much grilling going on, but there's a lot of other things going on.
Probably hanging out at Grotta Bar and Lounge. Appreciate our friends down there.
That's probably where it's
just at. Down the block.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't partake, but they definitely partake. And they a lot of them have partaken. Yeah, Austin, now to you. We're gonna start with the good stuff first. On a scale of 1 to 7. Now, mind you, I've traveled with Nick before.
You have.
just playing. Scale of 1 to 7. How was it traveling with Mr. Nick?
Wayfair's big sale is returning. Get ready for Way Day. For 4 days only, score up to 80% off all things home with free shipping on everything. From October 26th through 29th, score Wayfair's best deals, like up to 80% off area rugs, up to 60% off mattresses, up to 60% off bedroom furniture, and more exclusive doorbuster deals. So mark your calendar and shop Way Day starting October 26th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It was, I would say, probably, I'll give Nick a 6.5. I really will. Because this is now 2 trips in a row that the Nick and I have taken. I mean, go back to Stillwater a couple of years ago for regionals.
Yeah.
That one was a little shaky. He got himself a nice hotel and I got the $95 hotel.
Oh.
Yeah, we were staying 2 completely different sides of town. Like, did not cross paths except when he picked me up, and then we went to the games in Stillwater. But other than that, it was fine. This time, stayed in the same hotel.
Yeah.
He did a great job handling the Ubers and the transportation. We worked very well together on the subway and the bus system.
How do you like the subway? That's your first time?
Fine. Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, no. I got family in Chicago. We've done that before. Right. Did the New York subway.
We know Nick going. Nick, listen.
Well, this is his first time.
On the subway. How did he do?
He was fine. Scared? No, he was fine. He handled it like a grown-up. He was very mature. Yeah, in the same hotel. Did a great job coordinating Ubers. Great wingman at media days. He was engaged, asking questions. Appreciate him holding the camera for me to talk to the people I got to talk to as well. Did a pretty good job splitting the bills or whatnot. The food went on the company card, but you know, we go back and forth with rounds, so there's no trade-off. The one thing that I will ding him for is that on both flights to Chicago and back to Omaha, somehow he ended up in boarding group 3 and I ended up in boarding group 5 both times. Now it worked out slightly better for me on the way back, even despite delays. Something was weird where they said, yeah, we're already out of bin space with group 3, so you got to start checking your bags. Well, between Nick in like the start to middle of group 3 and friend of the program, Wilson Moore of the World Herald, who was in the back end of group 3, they magically found enough room. So Wilson and I didn't have to check our bags, but Nick had to check his, even though he was at the start of group 3. So, it was a great trip. Appreciate the chance to hang out with Nick. Like I said, I was just glad that his first time at Wrigley was a winner. He wasn't an obnoxious Cubs fan. He was living his best life. He was feeling himself a little bit. I was glad to see it.
Yeah.
It's good for him.
Yeah, he looks excited, man. I mean, when you grow up a fan of a team and you finally get to go as an adult, too. Mm-hmm. Not like when you go and you're like 5 years old and you'd be like, or 6 years old and be like, hey, you remember when you were 6 years old? Like, no, I don't remember. You say yes, but you really don't. So,
did you hear how much his beer cost at Wrigley Field?
Like $16, right?
19.
It better be gold laced or infused beer.
It was not. It was Michelob Ultra.
But you only go, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity, not only to go to Wrigley, but then the Cubs game and a playoff game, and they win. You got splurged a little bit. You guys earned it. You guys worked hard.
He had a Chicago dog. Did it the right way.
He did?
He did.
Yeah, good for
him. He enjoyed it. He did deep dish pizza as well.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, Nick is one of those dudes. He digs himself a huge crater of a hole. Like instantly. But he always finds a way to dig himself or to climb himself out of there. That's pretty cool, man. Mm-hmm. Austin, what was one of the obviously in Nebraska basketball, both men and women's? What's your biggest take from seeing Nebraska, talking to people at Nebraska in both men's and women's? What's your big takeaway?
Big takeaway from the women is this is going to be Britt Prince's team, Quiet Assassin. So there's going to be a lot put on her plate. The men's side, they're very excited to have Rink Mast back. I don't think that's just a talking point. I do think that even on top of the basketball factors, they're going to be better just because Rink is back.
Yeah.
But then I think that the takeaway from both of those programs, and I asked Amy and Fred about it, you know, what do they appreciate about each other's programs? But Jay, right now, Nebraska women's basketball is on a streak of 5 consecutive postseason appearances, NIT, NCAA, NIT, back-to-back NCAA appearances. The men's program now back-to-back postseason appearances, NCAA tournament and crown championship. I asked Amy Williams, you know, what she thought the biggest reason for her program's sustained success was. And she said, continuity. They didn't have a single player transfer out of the program. Sure, they lost some pieces due to graduation.
Yeah.
But they didn't lose any pieces to the transfer portal. They were able to pick and choose what they wanted to add. And you take that and you compare it to what Nebraska men's basketball has done or has had to do. It doesn't necessarily feel like the quote-unquote quick fix, you know, transfer portal sort of thing. You know, just got holes, we got to patch, we just got to go get any sort of bodies, maybe like it was the first couple of years for Fred Hoiberg. It does seem like they have more of an identity and more of a plan. But what women's basketball has had that men's basketball hasn't is roster continuity among its top players. They had a little bit of it last year. In the form of Bryce Williams and Juwan Gary. But the women have had so much more continuity over the course of the last 5 years. And we'll even tie this into what Matt Painter said. And I want to get to more of what he said coming up at 5 o'clock. But Matt Painter was asked about, you know, transfer portal versus high school recruiting. Painter said the same thing kind of Amy Williams did. If we lose players, we don't lose starters. You know, we'll lose those kind of deep rotation pieces, but Purdue's bringing back all 5 starters from last year
yeah.
and adding to it.
And Big Ten Player of the Year.
Big Ten Player of the Year and Braden Smith, a guy that's probably going to be first team all Big Ten with him and Trey Kaufman Wren with the numbers that, that he's going to put up. But Matt Painter said, you know, if you're a coach in your first 3 years of the program, you probably have to rely on the transfer portal early just out of job security, you know, just because you have so many holes that you probably have to patch. But Matt Painter said what Amy Williams did, the fact that, that he's been at Purdue now in, into his 20th year as head coach, Amy Williams entering her 10th at Nebraska. At some point, most of the top programs make a commitment to high school recruiting. Yeah. They figure out who it is they want out of high school. They get that continuity over the course of years. And whether they play as freshmen or they don't play till they're juniors, they're guys that are in the program or gals that are in the program, learning the offense together at the same pace, pushing each other, getting to know each other. And it pays dividends on and off the court down the road. That's when one area where Nebraska men's basketball, I think, probably needs to start turning the corner if they don't want to feel like they're living on some borrowed time. I like a lot of what they've done. I like a lot of their moves over the last 3.5, 4 years, really. But you look at the teams that are consistently successful. You have one, you know, just down the hall in PBA. You look at maybe the model program in the Big Ten in Purdue. They both pride themselves on the roster continuity.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe the next step that Nebraska men's basketball needs to take.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to do. And, you know, I always say it, you know, it's the hardest place to be football wise is in 5-7, 7-5.
Yeah.
People want to pluck your roster.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of the analogy is the same thing where Nebraska men's and women's basketball is. You're good enough to get to the postseason. Definitely above average on the uptick. You have to worry about other more high profile and established teams try to come pluck your roster. And I think what Coach Painter said is huge. You don't lose starters. And then for Nebraska, especially on the women's side, you know, when you think of their, you know, obviously if you can get Widener, you know, get mm-hmm. hurt, that's like two players. You get the one that you get like now this time, but then also you get the leadership piece because the two bell cows probably for the team, obviously Britt Prince and if the health of Potts.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two younger players, sophomore players.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are sophomores. One's a true sophomore, and I think Potts redshirted last year, redshirted sophomore.
Yep.
But they're going through this process together.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about where Nebraska could possibly be, you know, as far as especially on the women's side, you got your two star players or two of your star players being very young that can lead you. That's that continuity that can really accelerate you both in the Big Ten and nationally. And then for Fred, it is a little bit different because you get, you know, Rink Mass back.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially you get them all over again.
Yeah.
Right. You get them fresh. You get them healthy. You get them focused and energized. And now you got like a senior leader, whether it's by actions or his words, probably a little bit of both. Right. So that gives you. And then you get Lawrence back. Right. So now mm-hmm. you're able to kind of, now I think where you look at Fred and I think Amy Williams kind of, you know, knew. Now I think it's probably just because the way she had to coach, you know, where she was at before, know what she wanted as a Lady Husker to be. Now I think, like you said, with Fred, now you're like, all right, we're going to get some dudes in here. We know it's going to be a grind. I want to have a better team. And I'm telling you, I think when he had to, like, you know, I don't know if Fred said it, but it came out that he met with Trev and he said he had a plan. Obviously, he didn't have to tell anybody the plan.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he actually...
He did the smart thing by not writing the plan down.
Right. but the thing is, he put it in action.
Yeah.
And then you saw it strategically and tangibly significantly different. That let me know, number one, you have a plan and you have a process, but you have a clear picture of what you want as a coach in your players.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more mentality, role based year to year, because on the surface, this team is supposed to be able to shoot better.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Whereas when Sam Griesel was here, they could really, you know, get downhill, especially when Sam, you know, went to stop the runs. Sam went to the block, got to the free throw line, and that was the kickstart.
Or Derek Walker getting
right,
downhill.
Derek Walker, right. Mm-hmm. Then right. And that was just, we're going to use our two or three guys better than you. And then I think last year, you know, whether it was Gary and obviously Bryce, you had a little bit of more especially with Bryce efficiency game and had the star power, but within this, within the team, then Gary, you know, Juwan really, you know, took off. And so this year is going to, I like it because even though I guess on paper, it's going to be better stretching, a better team at stretching the defenses shooting wise. It's still a Husker player, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Because you can go get a whole bunch of shooters and they don't want to do anything else. And they just want to jack up shots. Where now I think they have a different, you know, guys that are a little bit taller. You have guards, you have forward, wings, whatever you want to call them, all can put a, you know, put up three. So now you get some guys that maybe get downhill or clear things for Rink Mass and Lawrence to make plays at the end of the game.
You know this, having coached, played, watched plenty of basketball. It's one thing to be a good shooter in an open gym or an empty gym, either way. It's another thing for that to translate to a game. Nebraska is not such a good shooting team that it's going to be a one pass into the offense, Casey's feeling it. He's just going to jack one up and it's going to go down enough to make it worth it. This is a Nebraska team that is going to have to work for its good shots, which is where these guys have to remember, number one, to space the floor. Nebraska just kind of floated through some offensive possessions last year. Didn't seem like guys were always in the right spot, weren't where they needed to be on time. One of the softest screening teams that we've seen at Nebraska in a while. This year, the benefit is that these guys can shoot, so they're more likely to gravitate further out beyond the three-point line to space the floor. But then you have to do something with it, right? If your guy's going to come at you and run you off the line, take it. Be able to put the ball on the floor for one or two dribbles, make that cross-court pass when the help guy steps up, make the extra pass for that three. That's the kind of shot that makes you a good shooter. That's the kind of shot that if you're a 33% guy, you got to hit at 36, 37%. That's the kind of shot if you're a 37% guy, you got to hit at 40 to 45%. And I think Nebraska has more guys that could be able to put the ball on the deck and create an advantage. I think DeMarcus Lawrence clearly comes to mind there. Sam Hoiberg with, you know, his height, you talked about, oh, does it hold him back? Sam was really good at getting in the paint last year.
Yeah.
Problem was he turned it over a bunch, but he can get a paint touch for you. Kendall Blue, you think. Cale Jacobson is a change of pace guy, potentially. Rink Mast, we'll see if he's got any drive and kick to him as well. Nebraska can't just stand around the three-point line and wait for one or two guys to create the shots for him. Connor Seigen has to get better off movement. Price Sanford has to remember he's not at Iowa. He's got to move in space to the floor. They really like him off the bounce as well, especially second side. So Nebraska will want to shoot a bunch of threes. I think that's going to be their best strategy this year. But they can't fall into the rhythm of, oh, well, we have to shoot threes to win, so let's just jack up the first one. It's still going to be a team that needs to work for the right three.
Yeah. I mean, the right three and make the right decision at the right time, especially if you're a guard. Like if you're having a high pick and roll or they're playing drop coverage against you, that doesn't mean you shoot the three the first time, right? You can actually attack the defense. And then essentially what we used to call a gallop, step it back. And then now you're getting an easy three. Essentially you're making your own paint touch kick out three.
Yeah.
It's essentially an offensive rebound three. So, you know, getting more situational basketball, understanding the difference between an okay shot, good shot, great shot. And the more times you shoot good to great shots, the higher your efficiency rating will be on offense and the better shooting team you will be from the 3-point line. But then it's going to come down to my homeboy from Minnesota, Kendall Blue. Can you get downhill?
Yep.
DeMarcus Lawrence, can you get downhill? Rink Mast, can you get downhill when you have a significant quickness advantage? Say, like, generally he does against Northwestern's bigs because they're big physical guys. Mm-hmm. Or if you get switched out and you get into a guard, you have to be able to go bully ball in less than three or less than four dribbles. Actually, you want under three dribbles to get to the rack.
Just kind of thinking through big picture, Big Ten, just through the lens of Rink Mast. He's probably more comfortable on the perimeter than Trey Kaufman ran at Purdue, but Purdue's got a couple other centers that I'm really curious to see how Nebraska uses him against them. They only get him once down here. Wisconsin, I'd probably give Rink Mast the advantage. Michigan's another fascinating one of three very different big guys who could guard the five. Illinois, I think, is going to be a problem for Nebraska and Rink Mast again with the Avisich brothers who can play out on the perimeter pretty comfortable there. Iowa, I think, has a guy that's very similar to Rink Mass. That'll be a fun matchup to watch. Indiana's not huge. I think that's another place that Rink can have a pretty good game. Michigan State, I think Rink Mass will have an advantage on the perimeter. I'm trying to think. Washington remains to be seen. Ohio State, I think, has a similar guy. Yeah. But there will be those situations. Oregon, I think, Nebraska can match up pretty well with. Yeah. In terms of the length on Shellstad. And I was actually less impressed with Oregon physically than I thought I was going to be. They brought Shellstad and Biddle, who in terms of the production is probably the best 1-2 punch in the conference outside of Smith and Kaufman Wren. Shellstad might be 6 foot tall. And Biddle, I thought, was bigger than he was. Yeah. Like, I was surprised that Nate Biddle looked a little skinny. And he's not unathletic.
He don't look like but much.
No, he really didn't. And I was kind of surprised with that. He looked a lot bigger on TV than he did in person. So there's not a team that you look at in the conference and say, dominant. Yeah, Nebraska has their number. Yeah. Now, I think Purdue's going to be freaking good. Michigan, I think, really has some potential. UCLA, I really like. That's another one I think that Nebraska can make some hay against. That's a little shorter of a team. But there aren't going to be any easy games in the Big Ten. Nebraska's not going to, you know, cakewalk to the 4 seed or the 3 seed like it did a couple of years ago. Nebraska's going to have to work for it. I think the upper level outcome for this team is they can get up to 5th or 6th if everything breaks right and they shoot it well. But I think more realistically, they're in that 8th, 9th conversation and one of the last teams in the NCAA tournament discussion.
Yeah, preseason is going to be huge for them, how they gel, and then more importantly, how they start. Getting off to a good start when you have a team that's in transition and inexperienced playing with each other is huge. So we'll see. Anyways, we're going to take a quick break and come back, put a bow on the second hour. Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Old School with Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Download the mobile app and listen wherever you are on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Well, we're back, Jay Foreman, Austin Orman. Quick segment here. Before we turn it over to Austin, I head out to Seacrest Southwest against Bellevue West, two teams that have not met expectations. So it's a battle. And it's a perfect opportunity for Southwest to stand on business playing a Metro team. Mm. A name brand Metro team.
Mm-hmm.
A famous high school that had the likes of Eric Strickland there.
Mm-hmm.
The Bellevue Thunderbirds. And when they come down here for basketball, boy, these dudes, they like Duke Blue Devils. They come through knowing they're running through everybody. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Southwest and Bellevue West plays. I mean, Bellevue West obviously is a little bit on the downslide by their standards. And then Southwest, you know, I think they're trying to find their identity. So they're going to try to line up and punch you dead in the face, though. They try to line up and move you and move something, and they got about 5 running backs, and they all seem to be productive. So whoever's a hot hand, he's going to get a good workload. So
huge moment for the city of Lincoln too. I mean,
the bounce back,
right? I mean, for Southeast, for the city, and you're right. It's maybe not Bellevue West of 4 or 5 years ago when Danny Kalen was slinging around to Xavier Betts or what have you, but still plenty talented.
They got a good quarterback. Program. Will Anderson is the quarterback. Mm-hmm. He's pretty talented. He got a good, lively arm. I'm sure they got everybody, you know, some other guys as well. So it's not like, I mean, you're not going to just cakewalk against these guys. And they got a, you know, story program and some pride about themselves. And
you've seen Southeast a couple times this year. What does Southeast have to do, most importantly, to win the game tonight?
Southwest. They got to do really good in situational football. You know, they've shown the knack to burn timeouts early and not do well. And like, you know, you never want to, you know, the way they say, you never want to, you know, die with timeouts in your pocket. Situational football, turnovers. And if they can play their game, Bellevue West is in some trouble. And it's a good opportunity for Southwest and the city of Lincoln. I think Lincoln East played Columbus last night, unfortunately lost. Mm-hmm. So it's been a rough week. You know, you had the whole fiasco with Lincoln High having to forfeit, and they already had notified, according to them, the NSAA and, you know, Miller South could have played another opponent. it was injury related, you know, didn't get it. Then it kind of obviously snowballed.
Tristan and I are talking about that at six, by the way, as part of the lead up to the next
probably,
game.
So yeah, but stay tuned. It's a great opportunity for Southwest to play, let's say, a blue blood recent history football program. And they've probably been good for, you know, obviously quite some time, but just talking about right now. And it's a good matchup, and it's a great opportunity. It's no different than what we were saying that, Michigan might be down, but it's a great opportunity to beat a named brand. So that's where Southwest is, and I'm looking forward to calling the game. But looking forward to see how they go out there and compete, because they got some athletes, and you know, they're going to try to bring the funk.
Anytime you get a Metro team at home in Lincoln, it's a chance to send a message. Really, no matter who the Metro team is.
Well, I mean, I think it goes in cycles. I mean, obviously, I think in basketball, you know, over, you know, for sure, you know, with the Truckee Headruns and those teams and Hunter Salas's and those great games, the uptick was definitely up there in the O. Papillion La Vista South won it last year, so I consider them the Metro as well. And then football is up there as well. Westside was dominant for about 4 or 5 years, and obviously Maryland South last year won it, and looks like they're well on their way this year. Mm-hmm. But eventually, you like to see that pendulum swing, you know, down a little bit farther west on 80 to Lincoln, and you know, you got to get, you know, a collective effort. But then it starts with a game against an opponent, and there's no time like the present for the Southwest Silverhawks, one of the best looking rosters to come out there, as far as like big guys and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
See what they can do tonight.
And they wear Vikings colors.
Yeah, we're gonna see. Oh, you mean for Bellevue?
Bellevue.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They're Thunderbirds, though. They ain't the Vikings.
But they're not.
They bring it. They got a good quarterback, and I'm sure they got skill positions. And so they're trying to get, you know, rankings and points for the playoffs. So make sure you tune in. Obviously, listen to Austin at 6 before that. He'll give you all the inside scoop or what we know of about Lincoln High and Miller South. But then, obviously, preview Southwest and Bellevue West. I'm Jay Foreman, Austin Norman. Quick break, and we'll be right back.
Watch Old School Live on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Old School with Foreman and Norman. On 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.